Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vadava Giri Varadari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vadava Giri Varadari. Yashoda Nandana Praja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Praja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari.
Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtutana Shatta Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Vaishnava Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai Jagannath Paladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai Shri Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayet nashta prayesho bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki krishne swadham upagate dharma gyana ribi saha kalo nashta drisham esha puranarko dhunodita sadasevya Srimad Bhagavati Kata Yasya Shravana Matrena Harishchittam Samashrayet Paramananda Pataya Prema Varshaksharayate Sarvada Sarvasevyaya Shri Krishnaya Namostume. Hare Krishna. Good morning. We're continuing this wonderful chapter, The Brahmin's Wives Blessed. This is Canto 10, Chapter 23. Today we're doing text 31 and 32. 32 is on the board, and I think that's the one with the purport.
I'll just read 31, and then we can recite 32 together.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha Patayo Nabhisuyeran Pitri Bratri Sutadayaha Lokascha Vomayopeta Deva Ap Hanumanvate.
Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, "Rest assured that your husbands will not be inimical toward you, nor will your fathers, brothers, sons, and other relatives, or the general populace. I will personally advise them of the situation. Indeed, even the demigods will express their approval." And now text 32, we can do responsively.
Na pritaye nuragaya hyanga sangho nrinamiha tanmano mayi yunjana achiran mam avapsyata na pritaye nuragaya hyanga sangho nrinamiha tanmano mayi yunjana achiran mam avapsyata.
Please chant.
And
the word for word, na, not. Pritaye, for satisfaction. Anuragaya, for loving attraction. He, certainly. Anga sangaha, physical association. Nrinam, for people. Iha, in this world. Tat, therefore. Manaha, your minds. Mayi, upon me. Yunjana, fixing. Achirat, very quickly. Mam, me. Avapsita, you will achieve. In the translation, for you to remain in my bodily association would certainly not please people in this world, nor would it be the best way for you to increase your love for me. Rather, you should fix your minds on me, and very soon you will achieve me. And the purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Lord pointed out that people in general would not appreciate a loving affair between Lord Krishna, who superficially was appearing as a cowherd boy, and the wives from the Brahmana community. Also, the Brahmin ladies' own devotion and love would increase most efficiently in separation. In other words, it would be best all around if they continued to fix their minds on Lord Krishna and thus went on with the process they had been practicing throughout their lives. The Lord and His bona fide representative, the spiritual master, expertly engage the Lord's devotees in different types of service so that all of them can quickly return to His lotus feet.
Om Agyanatiminandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena
Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutade Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Tupadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dhina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripam Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So I'll just read back the two translations for these two verses. First, I'd like to beg the blessings and the mercy of all of you, particularly Subal Prabhu and Mother Krishna Archana. I'm just little Ujjwala Das, recently Ujjwala Das, and I shouldn't be sitting and speaking in front of you. I know I say this all the time, and it probably sounds pretentious, but I should be sitting there and you should be sitting here. So please at least bless me. I can say something that will purify myself. So the translations. The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, "Rest assured, your husbands will not be inimical toward you, nor will your fathers, brothers, sons, other relatives, or the general populace. I will personally advise them of the situation. Indeed, even the demigods will express their approval. For you to remain in my bodily association would certainly not please people in this world, nor would it be the best way for you to increase your love for me. Rather, you should fix your minds on me, and very soon you will achieve me." So, it's such an interesting pastime that we find ourselves reading. It has so many parallels with the Rasa Lila, and particularly the conversation of the gopis with Krishna before the Rasa Lila, when they left and went to the forest, just as the Brahmin ladies have done here. So much so that actually the next verse in the chapter, one of the translators, our His Holiness Bhanu Swami, he makes a footnote, and he says, actually, this verse isn't, it's only found in about half of the editions. It's not found in most editions. And we don't know, because most of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas haven't commented on it, but it's actually the same verse that appears in the 29th chapter of the 10th canto, where Krishna tells the gopis, go home. Being near me isn't so important. Actually, what's important is thinking about me, thinking about my form, hearing about me, doing all of these things. So the parallels are amazing. And a couple verses back, there was one line. And our acharyas, they say, this is amazing. This is the same line that the gopis spoke when Krishna first told them, go home. So the Brahmins' wives and the gopis, they're in a very similar mindset and a very similar mood. The Brahmins' wives, they're just, they have the, I guess it's a supposed misfortune, that they don't have gopi bodies, and so they aren't able to access the full realm of gopi bhav. And so Krishna actually does send them home for more purification, if you will, even though they already have prema. But even because Krishna is only interested in increasing the love of his devotees, there's still some sort of increase that needs to go on. And we'll hear about one particular lady, which, again, it's so amazing because it has such a parallel with the other pastime. There's one particular wife of the Brahmanas who wasn't able to get away. As we've heard in the description, their brothers and their husbands and all of their neighbors and everyone in their village tried to stop them. And most of them left. And most of them were able to just say, I don't have time for this, all these yagyas and all of your formalities and your varnashram. Krishna is there, I'm going to him. But there's one lady who, she wasn't able to get away. And we'll hear about that towards the end of this chapter, that actually she left her body and then entered into a gopi's body so that she could enjoy with Krishna in the way that she wanted to. Which again is the same thing that happens. The gopis, they leave, and some of the gopis, and our acharyas give quite an extensive commentary on why, some of them aren't able to leave their houses to go to the rasa dance. Some of them are stuck. But that being stuck, it actually facilitates an internal transformation for them, and it brings them to the level of devotion of the gopis who were able to leave. And so they leave their bodies and they take a body suitable to go and meet with Krishna and have ras. So it's really amazing. It's hard to keep the lines drawn between these two pastimes. And our acharyas, they've given little hints and little clues as to what the parallel is here, but they won't say strangely, but they've been a little bit silent in going deeply into why the parallel is drawn so much, at least on the commentaries that we have access to. Now, one thing that is it's a divergence, if we look at the pastime of Krishna trying to send the gopis home, is that Krishna's Lila Shakti has intervened in this pastime in order to make it happen the way it's supposed to happen. And I spoke about that a little bit in the last class that I gave, that generally Krishna is completely controlled by his devotees. When we're talking about Krishna, when we're talking about Vrindavan, when we're talking about prema for any form of Krishna or Vishnu Tattva deity, that deity is controlled by the matured love of his devotees. In other words, the shoe is on the other foot. He no longer makes the decisions in the relationship. That's the way it works. Our Rupa Goswami, he's told us that there are six symptoms of bhakti, and the last one is Sri Krishna Akarshaya. And what this means, Sri Krishna Akarshani, sorry, what this means is that Krishna, he's drawn to the devotee in a literal sense, he's pulled to that devotee, but the implication of it is that he's completely controlled by that devotee. Actually, the way it's said in Brihad Bhagavatamrita is that when a devotee, he becomes pure enough, then Krishna gives him all freedom. So in a bound state, we have practically no freedom because we'll misuse it. But as soon as we become pure enough and we no longer have any selfish motive, Krishna then says, okay, now you have the keys. You can do anything you want. I'm yours. Whatever you like, you can do it. So Krishna is actually bound by the will of his devotee. So it arises the question, why is it that, obviously, against their will, the Brahmin ladies are being sent home? They have prema. Our acharyas have said in purport after purport, they definitely have prema. It's not that they're ruchi bhaktas or asakti bhaktas. They're not quite there, and Krishna can still be a bit elusive. They have prema, so they have the ability to make Krishna do what they want to do. The thing is, one of Krishna's other shaktis, who's also his devotees, is interested in making the pastimes work in a really, really wonderful way for everybody involved. And so the Lila Shakti, she has precedence over Krishna's will. Because by his will, he wants to please his devotees. He wants to do what they want. If it was only up to that, and if the Lila Shakti didn't intervene, we would see a completely different pastime take place. Because you have Krishna standing in front of his devotees who have prema. But because the Lila Shakti intervenes, And she says, no, 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 this isn't the perfect situation. The whole situation changes. And she manifests some of his Aishwarya and gives him the ability to say, this isn't the right place. This isn't the right time. Because the Leela Shakti knows, she knows that the Brahman, the wives of the Brahmanas, the Brahman ladies, they will do best if they have an increase in their prema. Even though they have prema, prema has many steps. And so if that prema increases to a higher degree, actually they'll be able to relish more. They'll be able to take bodies which are fitting for what they would actually like to do, for the way they would like to reciprocate with Krishna. Now Krishna here, in speaking these verses, there are two aspects. These are two quite different verses, actually. So the second verse I'd like to touch on first, because this is Krishna just carrying in line with the conversation the way that I've already taken it. He's playing with them. Because actually, for any devotee, the highest thing that one can desire, there's a tattva, and then there's the way things are experienced. So in tattva, there's no difference between hearing about Krishna and seeing Krishna. There's no difference between chanting Krishna's name and seeing Krishna. Because when you're on the topmost platform, Krishna manifests in those things. But still, because the nature of bhakti is also very, it's simplicity, the devotee wants to see Krishna. It's not that the devotee will say, no, I don't want to see you right now. Go away, I'm going to chant your name. So for the devotees, they really want to see Krishna. And they want to be with Krishna personally. Actually, again, because it's hard to separate the two things, the best frame of reference I have for this is the conversation between Krishna and the gopis, where Krishna says, go, don't come to your house. He speaks this verse, which will be the next verse we read in this chapter, to the gopis. He says, Shravanad, Darshanad, Dhyayan, you should meditate on me, see my form in your meditation, hear about me. These are better than being with me. Doing sankirtan, this is better than being with me. So you can go home, go back to your houses. You don't have to worry about being with me. That actually won't give you so much pleasure. And the gopis, they say, what, do you think we're some yogis? You think we can be satisfied by these processes that you've given? You think we can be happy just sitting there chanting your name, closing our eyes and meditating on you? We want you. We want to be with you. We've given everything up. We've given up our ashram, we've given up everything in order to be with you. So Krishna's playing, and actually Sanatana Goswami, he says that. He says that Krishna is cheating the Brahmin's wives by speaking this verse, by saying, for you to remain in my bodily association would certainly not please people in this world, nor would it be the best way for you to increase your love for me. Rather, you should fix your minds on me, and very soon you will achieve me. For one, Krishna knows it's going to take them quite some time. They're going to have to leave their body. So he's cheating them a bit because he's saying it'll happen very soon, but actually they're going to have to go through an entire lifetime. And then, except for the one fortunate Brahmin lady who left her body immediately because she wasn't able to go. And I'll touch on that later. But, so he's cheating them in one way because he's saying it'll happen very quickly. And then in another way, he's cheating them because he's putting the basis for the relationship on what other people will think about the relationship. When this is the same Krishna that spoke in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parichaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebeo Moksha Ishami Mashucha. Give up everything. Don't worry about anything. Don't worry about what other people think. Don't worry about your dharma. Don't worry about any of this. I'll protect you from all of that. So the Krishna that's saying that, he is saying this, oh no, but other people won't, they won't take this relationship very nicely. They won't think very well about it. Krishna doesn't mind for that. Anyway, Krishna's having a relationship with the gopis. Nobody in Vraj even likes the idea of that. There are so many rumors that Krishna is doing this thing. And it's at the very, it's constantly, it causes all of the gopis so much pain and problems and ordeal. That ordeal is transcendental. But it's such an ordeal. It's not that he says, yeah, this is too much, it goes against society, so we shouldn't do it. So he's cheating them here. He's cheating these Brahmin ladies. That's what Sanatana Goswami is saying. I'm not saying this. Sanatana Goswami is saying, this is Krishna's nature. He likes to play games. And he does this actually for devotees in so many rasas. He did this to Arjuna as well. When Narada Muni, in the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when he visits Hastinapur. He visits Indraprastha. He goes and he says, "Whoa, Pandavas, you are the best devotees of the Lord. You are so amazing. He took you. He was like your cousin brother. He sat on the same bed with you. You shared food. You shared jokes. You know, Bhima, Krishna laughs at your jokes more than anybody else." And then he finally comes to Arjuna and he says, "Arjuna, how can anyone be more dear to Krishna than you?" And Arjuna actually says it. "I don't think I'm very dear to Krishna at all, because he completely cheated me. He spoke so many convincing words in this thing that he told me in order to convince me to kill my entire family. And I did all of it because I wanted to attain him. And now he's gone. Now he's left me." So Krishna likes to play games. Anyway, you have to read that part of the story to really unfold everything. And, you know, Narada Muni, as he goes and visits all of these devotees, he's seeing the transcendental nature of their relationships and the fact that prema makes one feel like they're less and less full. Prema makes one feel like they're less and less of a devotee. The highest devotee, the higher the devotee, the more they feel like they're not a devotee. This is the beauty of prema. It's one of the aspects of this ever-faceted gem of prema. And so Krishna, he does these things to his devotees in order to get them to increase in their love. Because the thing that he's not cheating these ladies about is the fact that separation is the ultimate, in Sanskrit we say udipan, the ultimate stimulant for love. This is, as I said in the last class that I gave, it is the hallmark of our sampradaya, this viraha. Other Vaishnav sampradayas, they hear about vipralamba and viraha and they kind of get a bad look on their face. Their lips curls. They think, this isn't right. Krishna and Radha, they don't have to go through this. They say nitya vihar. They're always together. There's no question of them being separated. And they're always together and it's always amazing. Which, one aspect of that is true. But the way that falls together is very important to understand. Because actually, in the realm of infinite ecstasy, the only goal is to increase the ecstasy. The only goal is to, okay, you just have ecstasy. So then the people that are in that place, their goal is just to make it more, and make it more, and make it more into infinity. This is the goal of Krishna and the Vrajvasis. The Vrajvasis want Krishna to enjoy more, and Krishna wants the Vrajvasis to enjoy more. And so, the topmost tool to do that, as elucidated particularly by our Vaishnavacharyas, our Gaudiya Vaishnavacharyas, is the mode of separation. Because when you're separated from someone that you love, it deeply, deeply, deeply stimulates your thoughts about them and your feeling about them. And Krishna knows this. And so he's telling the wives that when you leave, because now you've seen me. Before you were experiencing poor Virag, you were hearing about me, you had never seen me. Now you've seen me. Now, when you hear about me, you're going to see me. Those two things are going to become inseparable. One of our acharyas explains that this is the way these things work. Actually, because of the next verse, Shravanad Darshanad Dhyayan Mayi Bhavo Nukirtanat, that these things are given in a progressive order. That first there is hearing, and then there is darshan. Because the hearing creates a desire for darshan. In other words, we hear about Krishna, we read about him, maybe we read the Bhagavad Gita, we read something, and then we want to see him. And so we come to the temple and we take darshan. And oh, that's Krishna. I remember when I first came to the temple, I thought, because there was Radha and Krishna, and I understood who they were from reading, and then there was Krishna and Balaram. But because we dressed the deities so beautifully, and sometimes very feminine, I was thinking, why is Radha on Krishna's left side in this one, and she's on his right side in this other one? Because I didn't know who Balaram was. Because without hearing, there's ignorance. So you don't know, you can't know what you're seeing. You can't discern it. So after proper hearing, a desire to see, and then after seeing and more hearing, then comes meditation. Then comes thoughts. We may have a particular deity that we like. Again, just bringing it down to our level, because the process is, it's dynamic. It works for all devotees. Then comes meditation. Then comes thought. Maybe you have a favorite deity. And if you close your eyes and you think of them, you can see them. You can easily see that's the face of so-and-so, the deities that I have looked at a lot. Maybe you've sat in front of them and you've chanted japa. You've done these things. And then from there, kirtan, anu kirtanat. From that point of meditation, some kirtan can come forward. So this separation, after seeing, and for this thing, for this particular instance, it's talking about actual darshan, sakshat darshan in prema. Then when one undergoes any of these processes like shravan, like meditation, like kirtan, then Krishna comes into that process and he's there. And so that devotee, no matter where they are, no matter what they're doing, Krishna is always with them. And because Krishna is absolute, because he's non-different from his name, because he's non-different from his form, because he's non-different from the form that one meditates on, if one has enough purity to actually realize that, he's always there. And so Krishna knew that the Brahmin ladies, they would go through this, and the oscillation between the apparent separation that they'll experience after this meeting, and then the very, very visceral experience of Krishna being there in their meditations, the oscillation between these two things would serve to be a very, very, very strong stimulus for them moving towards ultimate perfection. And again, we're already talking about people who are in the realm of ultimate perfection. But the realm of ultimate perfection has many different levels. It has different categories, I guess, that one can enter into increasingly, and move towards. And for the devotees in Madhurya Rasa, like these ladies in the Madhurya Rasa, some of those top, you know, very, very special elements of prema, they're accessible. And so Krishna, naturally wanting the best for his devotees, he wants them to be able to experience that. He's not happy just to say, okay, you're here, we can just enjoy like this. If they can go further, he wants to go further. Because again, that's the nature of the transcendental realm. He wants them to enjoy to the highest degree that they can, and they want him to enjoy to the highest degree that he can. So, just to give a little backing to this, because sometimes, and I remember for me, and even it's a little inconceivable, it's quite hard to understand exactly why separation is higher than meeting. And to some degree, we just have to trust it, because all of our acharyas are telling us this, and we have so much understanding of this, and this is the cornerstone of our lineage. It's really what we've got. This is our thing. It's our secret. Separation. Viraha bhav, Vipralamba bhav. This is what the Gaudiyas are about. So we need to understand it as much as we can. Even though, because it's such a transcendental thing, and because in this world separation generally breeds ignorance, it breeds some semblance of what transcendental separation does for a small period of time. In other words, if you really love someone, and actually we see the greatest love stories of all time, in all of history, in all of existence, secular, religious, whatever they're all based on this principle of separation. Romeo and Juliet, all of the Greek epics, they're all about either the lovers, one lover dying, or the lover being separated, maybe having to go off to war, and then the other lover being left just thinking about and being in that depression. And somehow we find these things extremely relishable, this feeling of separation. Because this, as Rupa Goswami has explained, the way emotions work in this world, they are a reflection of the way emotions also work in the spiritual world. This is why Rupa Goswami took the science of rasa from Bharat Muni, who, by all accounts, was a secular, he's like a playwright. He basically wrote the semantics for all of the best Sanskrit dramas you could imagine. He wrote the science of rasa. But Rupa Goswami said, no, this is actually coming from the Veda, and people have it mistaken, he's actually empowered by Krishna to give this knowledge from the spiritual world. And the reason it's applicable to things that we experience in this world, and the reason why it works, if you look at works of Kalidas and other secular Sanskrit writers, when we say secular Sanskrit writers, it's a bit difficult to discern because Vedic culture was so entwined with the Vedas. But anyway, people who were writing without a direct desire to glorify the Puranas, Kalidas wrote, he wrote expositions which were somewhat his imagination on religious subjects. But the reason why these things are applicable, the science of rasa is applicable to these things, and they have such an effect on people who hear them, even though they're not devotees, they're not religious, they're not oriented in that way, is because ultimately it's just a reflection of the way emotions work in the transcendental world. And so because of this, we see this principle of separation being so powerful. I remember one devotee asked me, he said, why is it, first he said, what types of songs are always the most popular types of songs? Subal, are the happy songs the ones that are always extremely popular and on the radio, or are the sad ones? If we look at it, if we look back, what ones are the most moving for people? The blues. There you go. An entire, it doesn't even have to have lyrics. Just the feeling of the sadness that comes through the blues and those scales, they evoke that feeling. So sad songs, they're always the deepest songs. Even you look at Bollywood, you look at Hollywood, you look at any music industry in any country, the songs, people always gravitate towards the, I miss you, I love you, where have you gone? This feeling, it dominates culture. Because this is actually the most powerful emotional stimulus for love. And it's the same way in the spiritual world. The most powerful stimulus for love is to be separated from one's beloved. Now there's one verse I'd like to share, which comes in Sri Padyavali, where, and there's actually another book. This is quite amazing because in Sri Padyavali, it's quoted as Srimati Radharani saying it. And in this other book, it's quoted as Krishna saying it. So they're both speaking the same verse. So we can take this as quite an equivocal understanding of how they feel about each other and about this subject matter. And again, just as a preface to this, we have to understand that it doesn't mean that they don't want to be around each other. That's not what it means that separation is the highest thing. It's not that when they're with each other, they say, no, 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 it's better if I just meditate on you. You know, it's not like that. But the feeling of separation is so intense, and it gives them such a deep experience of each other, actually, that they can't help but admit that is the most powerful experience that I get. And because they're both absolute, because Krishna is absolute, if we take it into the realm of just him reciprocating with his devotee, when a devotee is in separation and meditating on him, Krishna is actually there, so it's only apparent separation. We call it viraha or vipralamba, but Krishna comes immediately, and so he's there in that thing. So this verse, it's in a very difficult meter, so I'm not even gonna try. I'm just gonna read it out. It's Sangama Viraha Vikalpe, Varam Iha Viraho na Sangamantasya, Eka Sa Eva Sange, Tri Bhuvanam Api Tanmayam Virahe. So Sangama Viraha Vikalpe. Vikalpe means a choice. So in the choice between Sangha and Viraha, in choosing between meeting, Sangha, and separation. This is Srimati Radharani speaking to one of her friends, because one of her friends saw, after Krishna left Vrindavan, that she was sitting with her eyes closed, and she wouldn't eat anything, and she practically wasn't breathing. And so her friend asked her, are you okay? Have you become some mystic yogi? Or are you wrapped in meditation on Krishna? What's going on here? And so Srimati Radharani, she replied to her friend. She said, Sangama Viraha Vikalpe. She said, of the two things, of separation and meeting, Varam Iha Viraha. Varam means the best. Like Girivara means best of mountains. Oh, Giriraj, you are Girivara. Girivara Dhari, that person who held up on his hand the best of mountains. So Varam Iha Viraha, the best of the two is separation. This is Srimati Radharani speaking. Na Sangamantasya. not meeting with him. Dasya means of him. Not meeting him, but being separated from him. It's the best, actually. Ekasa eva sange tri bhuvanam apitan mayam virahe. Because when I'm with him, Eka, he's standing in front of me. Now, I claim and hope he accepts me a little bit. One of my Shiksha Gurus, Sri Srimad Gaurgovinda Maharaj, he would often say this, that when your beloved is in front of you, you are trying to take what is outside and put it into your heart. But when your beloved is not in front of you, you're trying to take what's inside your heart and put it in front of you outside. So by nature, separation is more intense. It's more relishable because what is inside your heart is burning you. Whereas in meeting, that person's standing outside and you're trying desperately to bring them into your heart. Again, it's very difficult to understand. It's not easy to just wrap it, but we have to contemplate these things. We have to think about this because Srimati Radharani herself is saying, Sangama virha vikalpe varam iha viraha. She's saying, when I'm with Krishna, there's one of him. But when Krishna's gone, what are the words? Tri bhuvanam apitan mayam virahe. In that separation, he's everywhere. I can't look anywhere and not see Krishna when he's not standing in front of me. She looks and she sees a tamal tree and she faints because just the color of the tree makes her faint. She looks up and she sees a rain cloud and she faints because, oh, that must be Krishna. And we can go even deeper. Even when she's with Krishna, the separation is so pervading. This is why it's the hallmark of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, that she's thinking about what if he leaves and she faints just because there's some slight mention, Madhu is gone. And she's actually sitting in his lap, if we know this pastime. Madhu Mongol comes and says, I've chased the bee away. Madhu is gone. And she faints, though she's sitting in his lap, because she's so wrapped in that ideal. And this is actually, this very feeling is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exists. He's always existed. It's not that he came into existence at any point, because we're not talking about linear things. The beauty of Vedic philosophy and having an understanding of non-linear time is that we don't have to have a starting point for anything if it's transcendental. But we can also point out the reason for something. It doesn't have to have a linear start in time to have a reason for its existence. The reason for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's existence is the experience of separation and the fact that Krishna's devotees relish that to the superlative degree. Because of many instances where Srimati Radharani was feeling like this instance where there was a bee bothering her, and Madhu Mangal came and chased it away, and chased it far away, and then came back and said, Madhu is gone, don't worry, you can be happy. And her fainting in what is called prema vaichitya, which means separation while meeting. Because of that, Krishna thought, what is that? What kind of pleasure does she derive when she's around me? That the very thought of being separated from that, even though not actually separated from that, can cause this type of ecstasy. And so God himself became curious. God himself became curious. That very sentence, that's quite a paradox. God himself became desirous of experiencing something that was outside of his experience. And so this is who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to experience and also came to give. This is what Rupa Goswami has written all of his books to give. This is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, everybody, they're writing all of these magnum opuses just to explain to us this reality, which ultimately they want us to experience. This is what the Brahmin's wives are going to experience. They're already experiencing it because Krishna is saying, okay, that's enough. You can go home. Because he knows what they'll go through. He knows that they'll have that deeper and deeper and deeper experience, and they'll be moved to a higher and a higher and a higher level. So I guess we can stop there. That's as far as I can churn for today. This pastime is it keeps coming back to this kind of same angle. So I'm finding it a challenge to find ways to not just give the same class again. So if there are any mistakes, please forgive me. You're all learned Vaishnavas, please correct them. And if you saw anything nice, tad guru eva me nahi, it's my guru janas, it's certainly not mine. If there are any comments or questions or corrections, please. Technical difficulties. It's a good thing Subal's here, because if this went wrong with me here, I would just... I don't know.
Someone can use some plug-in stuff.
Because they're like me and they don't know how it actually works. Now it's off.
Thank you for the class. It's such a... esoteric subject matter, and obviously, you know, you have to be there to experience it. For most of us, it's just a contemplation of, you know, some very esoteric high principle, highest principle, as you point out accurately. Would we understood that, you know, Krishna's different dealings with the gopis and the wives of the brahmanas, he is directing the wives of the brahmanas into this space of separation and to experience that, that will enhance and will increase their prema, and the experience of prema. And for the gopis, in one sense, they're constantly in that experience themselves, although they're constantly associating with Krishna too. Because even we hear the narrations that when Krishna leaves to the forest with the cowherd boys and the cows, just that moment or those moments of separation is like a whole lifetime for them. And so they're constantly in this experiencing this separation and union, separation and union. And so it's almost like they're the epitome on that experience.
They are.
And so other devotees are led in the braj mood, or the braj bhakti is to experience that. So in one sense, could we say that Krishna is leading the brahmana ladies to become absorbed in that space, as you know, as you been highlighting in your class? Is that the understanding?
Yeah, as far as I understand it, that's correct. That he wants to increase their love. He knows, actually, I can't remember if it was Sanatan or Jiva Goswami, because I just quickly browsed this section of the chapter this morning, but one of them explained that the Brahmin's wives, they had particular desires that couldn't be fulfilled because they had the wrong body. And so they needed the bhav and the body of gopis. And so he was sending them away in order to allow them to cultivate that through that meditation. And as I said, he's doing a bit of cheating in this verse, because he said, "You'll attain me very soon." But he knows that actually they'll attain him after they leave their bodies and take a new body, which is fit for what they're aspiring for. So for them in particular, they're very much desiring that. And then we get an example, not to steal the thunder of the people in the subsequent classes, because it's also difficult to speak on a chapter when you have to somehow confine yourself to two verses, or you know, maybe you can stretch it to three or four as I've done. But later on, we'll hear about the Brahmin lady who was restrained. And we can go deep into that. But she actually, because of that burning fire of separation, she left her body and attained a body that was fit for the type of enjoyment that she wanted. So yes, in answer to your question, this is what Krishna is trying to lead them to, because he knows what they desire. And yayatamam prapadyante. He wants them to experience it.
There's another interesting point that I think I'm going to, tomorrow I'm giving the class, and I'm going to think about this one that I just came, that in one sense Krishna is directing them basically ordered them to perform their devotional service in certain way that's not what they were desiring. In one sense, they were disappointed when they heard that instruction, because they wanted to perform devotional service in a particular way in association with Krishna, but they obediently accepted Krishna's instruction. And Krishna is assuring them that this is the best for you. It's the best in all circumstances, for everybody, and is the best for them to increase their love, and very soon they will attain, they will have their desire fulfilled. So in one sense, that's something that we find as devotees experience that many times, that we may desire something and sometimes we receive an instruction that it doesn't necessarily fit how we see ourselves want or desiring to serve. And then, if you obediently do, having faith on Guru and Krishna, then, the things can become very elevating.
Nice, yeah. I look forward to hearing more.
Thanks for the nice discourse, Prabhuji. I was just thinking, kind of mulling this over, you said that, and I don't want to misquote, but as we cultivate Krishna consciousness, there are obviously very advanced devotees around us. So I was just thinking for myself, as a sadhaka, daily coming for darshan, chanting, taking association, if on a time scale, if we're making that progress, if we're keeping some routine, keeping some continuity in our schedule, then how are we to perceive, or how are we to know what exactly is the driving force or the driving factor in our attachment for Krishna's lotus feet? Because if we consider even on that minuscule, fractional time scale that we're making some progress, so hopefully we're better than yesterday, today. But at the same time, we're supposed to feel that we're not a good devotee, or not a good devotee, but we're not an advanced devotee, or we're not a very good devotee. Something like that, you said. What is that confidence? What is that driving force? What is that attachment? If you can comment on that.
I don't really understand the question. Could you try to rephrase it a bit?
Yeah, so like day by day, if we're practicing sadhana bhakti, hopefully today we're better than we were tomorrow.
Yesterday.
Hopefully today, yeah, sorry, yesterday. Hopefully today we're better than we were yesterday. So how are we to qualify the statement you made that we, as we make advancement, we feel we're not advanced?
I understand.
That
is not something that you strive for. That's something that you experience. That's something that you experience as you advance. Humility is a result. Humility is not a practice. You can try to practice humility, but the very idea of practicing humility is in itself not really humble, because you're making a presentation of your humility. Humility is a result of a deep, deep feeling of being unqualified for something. And that only comes, well, the first thing that creates humility, which is a lot more tangible for us, is knowledge. As Albert Einstein said, one of the smartest men alive in his time, he said, "Now that everyone in the world thinks that I know everything, my highest realization is that I know absolutely nothing." Because by becoming very realized in his studies, he realized that there was so much more to know. And he realized that what he had discovered was actually so flimsy and so fleeting and so based on his own preconception that really his knowledge was a drop in the bucket. Whereas somebody who's just graduating college, they think, "Oh, now I know my subject fully. Now I know science. I've understood everything. I've come to the top echelon." But the real scientists, they know we really don't know much, because they're privy to the way the world actually works. So it's the same in spiritual life. When you study the Vedas deeply, when you study the Bhagavatam deeply, you understand that really, I'm not so far. This can happen very fast if we actually hear nicely. If we hear nicely and we hear about devotees, we hear about people like the Brahmana's wives, we hear about the gopis, we hear about Prahlad Maharaj, we hear about Dhruva, we'll realize very quickly that that's not where I am. So I'm very, very small and weak. And then the only thing we can do is say, "Krishna, you please help me. I'm suffering with this. I have this addiction, shopping addiction, whatever addiction it is." You know, if you're a man, there's one particular addiction that you most likely have, because that's 2020. So much is there showing us that we're really, really, really not advanced. The problem is we're in such a degraded condition that we think we're advanced. So the only thing that can bring us out of that is actually advancing. Advancing means what you said. It means step by step continuing to do the process. But I'd like to add something, which is very, very important, that somehow I won't say it like that, that most people, they don't see. Perhaps they're not told about this, even though all of our acharyas have told us about it, even though Srila Prabhupada has told us about it. The only way out of that and the only way to really advance is to hear about Krishna. Rag bhakti, that's a bad word in some places, rag bhakti starts with hearing about Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, "Pujala raga patta gaurava bhange." He says, "I take the rag marg and I worship it by keeping it on my head." That means you've heard about it. That means you read the 10th canto regularly. You read the Krishna book regularly. You read Chaitanya Charitamrita regularly. And you actually know who you're chanting about. You actually know who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, who Krishna is, who Radha is, why they feel what they feel. Yes, it may be intellectual, but by intellectually understanding such a wonderful thing, something happens. A desire may, doesn't have to, because it doesn't work like that, because there's also the Sangha of devotees who have that desire which is required, which you touched on in your question in the very beginning, that there are advanced devotees around us, but that also requires some purification to see. Many neophytes think, "Oh, there are no advanced devotees. Prabhupada was the last advanced devotee, and now I just have to struggle to advance myself in spite of all the neophytes around me." Many devotees think like this, but it's not true. Through hearing, our consciousness can be purified enough, and through that intellectual endeavor and touching something, because you're touching it when you read the Bhagavatam, you're touching it. The second verse of the Bhagavatam tells us this, that you're touching Krishna, even if you're a neophyte. Even one who just desires to hear, he's not expert, he doesn't know the tattva. If he desires a little bit, if he's a little inquisitive into this book, then he touches Krishna. He doesn't only touch Krishna, he captures Krishna. And he may not perceive it, but Krishna is there in his heart, bound by that seedling of prema which is coming. This is what our acharyas have said. So by hearing, the opportunity for the creeper of rag bhakti comes, and it may sprout. But if we don't hear, if we just come and take darshan and chant, but we don't hear, nothing can happen. That's what I explained about this verse, which actually our acharyas didn't comment on here. The next verse, they commented on in the 29th chapter. They said that without shravanam, there's only ignorance. If you don't hear, what will you do? What are you chanting? So many people walk in here, and when they see you, they say, Hare Ram. Hare Ram. Well, they're chanting. That's very nice. It's good that they chant. But from a Gaudiya perspective, what are they chanting? What is that going to do? It's some mishmashed, wishy-washy conception of impersonalism mixed with them loving seeing Ramayana on TV for the last 30 years in India and thinking, you know, why are you saying Krishna first? Ram is God. It's so much in that one, Hare Ram, so much misconception is packed. Why? Because there's no shravanam. There's no hearing. They don't know what they're saying. And so they won't get the result. If you want something, you have to know it. You can't actually want it until you know it. So we come into a society and we pretend like, now I'm a devotee. I put the tilak on. I'm so sorry. I forgot my tilak this morning. I'm sorry to the Bhagavatam. But we put on the dhoti, we put on whatever. But then we don't hear about Krishna. And we're not going to go very far. It's not going to happen. So the real answer to your question is hearing. We have to do deep, intense shravanam. That deep and intense doesn't mean long. It doesn't mean you have to do it for 10 hours a day. But for 15 minutes a day, we should sit down and we should read with the intention that I want to actually know Krishna. Because that's why we came here, isn't it? That's why we're devotees. Because we wanted to know the absolute truth. What's the first verse of the Vedanta Sutra? Atata brahma jigyasa. When one is inquisitive, then they should inquire into the absolute truth. From the standpoint of inquisitiveness, one can inquire about the absolute truth and then can know. And then Shastra Yoni Tvat, the Brahma Sutras tell us, Shastra Yoni Tvat, that absolute truth only takes birth through the Veda, which means through Shravanam, means you can only come in touch with Krishna through the Shastra, which is why Prabhupada tells us about the checks and balances system, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And the Shastra actually being the emperor, the chief of those three things. So we have to do that. If we don't do that, don't do it, and you'll see. That's it. Sorry, it was a long answer. But
good answer. You really gave us what was in your heart. I just wanted to make a comment. The other day I wasn't able to make a comment when Naveen Krishna Prabhu was giving a class. He said something like, when you were a child, you had a thought like this, or you felt like this, and it made me think, wow, when I was a child, I was always coming to the temple, and even since childbirth, I've always gotten some scars from my parents about Vedic civilization. So like from day one, I was getting some scars. And growing up in a Western environment, we seem to take on a lot of things that are not so useful. And so I thought, but what would be that feeling to be a Westerner and come to Krishna consciousness, that fresh feeling, that new feeling, that wow, this is something amazing feeling. I thought, oh, I want to, next lifetime, I want to be Westerner. And I want to do that feeling, I want to have that feeling, Krishna. But then immediately I said, no. But then I remembered Ramayana. In Ramayana it stated, Bin Hari Kripa Mile Nahi Santa. We were walking at Millennium Park to see the Christmas lighting tree. And we were chanting. I had my bead bag wrapped tightly around my hand. Suddenly I saw three devotees. I saw one devotee. I saw Kantimala. And his parents walking behind him. I said, oh, Hare Krishna! Binu Hari Kripa Mile Nahi Santa. I thought, why I need to take another lifetime? No. Every time I see a devotee somewhere, I have that fresh feeling of coming to Krishna consciousness. Even though I'm chanting, I'm lost. But as soon as you see devotee, you see Kanti Mala. It's a rebirth.
That's very sweet. Thank you.
So a lot of these parallels are coming together.
But we have to endeavor on our own also. We have to be around the devotees, and we have to make a strong endeavor.
Definitely.
No devotee can make us be Krishna conscious. Not even your guru can make you be Krishna conscious. He can't do it. It's not what he wants to do. It's not the process that he's come to give. So we have to endeavor on our own. But there's a special place for Sangha, because Sangha is one of the most purifying and most powerful things that we can experience. Anyway, it's 8:40. Perhaps we should stop here. We've gone a little over. We've been keeping pretty chaste to the 8:30 thing lately, so I apologize for breaking that. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Sri Kishore Kishore ki jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai. Sri Sri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Sri the Prabhupada ki jai. Vaishnava Bhaktivrinda ki jai.